And good morning. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves, News Director. Right now, joining me on the phone lines, U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joins us. And Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate you so much.
You bet. Good to be with you.
So I know everyone's been talking about COVID-19. A lot of people are at home. Some people are working. Kind of your thoughts on the government's response to COVID-19 as we continue to go along in this?
Well, I think you almost had to see this. You're taking this seriously. It's not as though, we don't deal with flu all the time. In fact, even some more drastic numbers that don't really get the publicity this has gotten, it's just that the unknown. It is a virus without a vaccine, without really no known treatments. We're seeing a lot with hydroxychloroquine and things of that nature, but that's off label. And so, there's been some positive results, but still a whole lot of unknowns out there. And so I think the response, like any crisis, we've come to realize is that crises expose gaps, weaknesses, and vulnerabilities. And so while you're going through that, there'll be arguments over whether the response was strong enough or was it too weak. We don't know. We won't know until we're on the other side of this. But I do sense that there is a great pent-up demand to get our economy back open and resume some sense of normalcy, while at the same time dealing with the protocols that we've been observing the last few weeks, and that is to do everything we can to stop the spread through social distancing and other mitigation measures that will probably become the new normal.
And that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, kind of played right into that. How do you go about, and not just you necessarily, but, kind of the government and all that, how do you all balance trying to open up an economy that's initially been shut down? How do you balance that along with safety and that? Because you start taking a look at people need to get back to work and that, but at the same token, people are afraid about more cases. How do you balance that? And then second part of that, how soon could it be? I know President Trump said opened up by Easter. Well, and of course that hasn't happened for obvious reasons. But when do you think it could open back up, and how, when it does, do you be able to balance all that?
Well, I think, of course, Easter was aspirational, and we know that was probably, obviously now we're past Easter and we still haven't opened up. I think the next benchmark will probably be the 1st of May, and I think we'll probably have to incorporate some of the things to some degree that we're doing now, and that is sort of, trying to minimize travel if it's not really necessary, trying to, impart some sense of how important it is to retain some level of social distancing until such time as we have a known vaccine and a known treatment, things like that. So, I mean, it is a delicate balance, as you suggest. But the other thing is, if we don't get our economy back up to speed, we won't have the resources to care for sick people. So it's almost a situation where, as has been indicated by many people, the president himself, the treatment is actually worse than the disease in this case. We have to be careful that we don't get in that type of position, because in the end, we've got to have the resources to be able to take care of ourselves. And so, as I said, as we look back on this in hopefully weeks instead of months, but in weeks, when we look back and say, where did we come up short? What did we learn about this? I think one of the first things we'll have learned is our dependence on China for anything is unsustainable, it's untenable, and it is grossly un-American. We are fully capable of taking care of ourselves, and we should take care of ourselves and only have to rely on ourselves, particularly when we see situations like this arise. But the real national security vulnerability that we see is the fact that our stockpiles were not sufficient to address this issue, and we had to rely on China to help us. And we don't ever want to be in a position to rely on China for anything. And you've heard me say this before, because you and I have talked about it. It has to do with security. As I've said before, you know, food security is national security. A country that can't feed and clothe itself is vulnerable. And while we're a long way from that happening, we didn't realize how close we were to having this type of fallout with regard to our ability to address this medical crisis on our own terms. That is, being reliant on a country that is willing to leverage those resources for economic gain, or what their long-term goal is essentially to supplant the U.S. economy as the preeminent economy in the world. And what I'm interested in is taking care of America and not being reliant on China, not just on the medical things, but any other things, any other category that you can come up with. We have the resources to take care of ourselves, and we should make that a priority.
U.S. Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. As this goes along, I know that you said that May is one benchmark. There's so many different models that are out there by way of you know, where the peak could be in that. I know that NYIT's Dr. Shane Spites has been monitoring about four different models, and he said the peak in Arkansas could be somewhere between May and July, possibly. Mm-hmm. If that happens and you have industry that's still shut down more, are you in favor for continued federal response by way of more stimulus bills and those kinds of things like what we've already seen before?
Well, here's what I think that we need to be prepared for. And that one thing is that at least the state of Arkansas has shown that the states are capable of a response on their own, not without federal resources, but a response tailored to the state. And Arkansas is doing much better than many other states across the country. And so, you know, giving credit to the governor and his team for their leadership, and he's got a great team that's guiding the state through this, that's an example of kind of where I think we need to be from the federal standpoint. Yes, we need resources, but we need to defer to the states as much as possible because the states know the situation on the ground better than the federal government does. This is the same principle that at least, you know, I espouse with regard to federal involvement. The states are fully capable of caring for themselves to the extent that they can, obviously. And when they can't, you know, there is a federal backstop. That's what it's there for. But primarily, we have this argument in about education, for example. You know, a one-size-fits-all federal type model doesn't serve one state as well as it might serve another, or vice versa. You know, so I think we should defer to the states to take the lead in their state. And then where it's necessary to provide resources as a backstop, then those resources should be available. So that's something that's going to have to be addressed essentially in real time, and then our responsibility in Washington is going to have to be to provide those resources where necessary.
And I guess so, as we take a look at the future, the next, you know, several weeks to maybe a couple of months in that, do you think the federal government will get involved by way of using this as a way of setting additional regulations? Like, for example, if we have sporting events that do go back up and we have concerts and other things, I mean, do you think that you could see that where there will be, like, you know, social guidelines and other things that the federal government could try and put into legislation or law?
Well, I think you have to be really careful with crisis legislation in that, you know, people tend to react emotionally, viscerally in the moment and don't make the best decisions they could make. So, you know, making permanent decisions, policy decisions, statutory decisions in a time of crisis is actually a dangerous proposition, number one. Number two, kind of going back to my argument about the states being equipped to handle these issues on their own, what folks do in New York City doesn't necessarily have to look like what folks do in Arkansas for a variety of reasons, and one of them being a population density. But, you know, there are things that I think that we're going to have to address. But now is not the time, in my opinion, to go in and make permanent statutory changes to societal issues, changes that we'll have to live with indefinitely because we're afraid or because we've had, you know, an emotional response to the crisis, and we make the problem worse by not thinking this through. I mean, there's things that we need to do in real time, but whether or not we need to make that statutory and permanent and really affect the way business is done, for example, we want to be careful about that.
Last question. Earlier you said that sometimes that this might, you know, bring out, some people argue about weaknesses and those kinds of things. In your opinion, what do you think that this particular thing, by way of the response to COVID-19 and all that, what do you think that if you see any weaknesses that might be addressed and that might need to be addressed in the future, you know, God forbid anything like this does happen, and then what can we learn from this? What can be taken away from something like this, especially like the response to this?
Well, I think one thing we have to recognize, as I mentioned before, is that we have to control our own supply chain. And that means that's actually probably a positive for us. And that is, I want to see industries brought back here, repatriated into the United States. And that has an economic upside for us, but it also has a strategic upside for us, in that we're not vulnerable to the political whims of a nation like China. That's important. I mean, we really made ourselves vulnerable on the medical front because of our inability to address this crisis on our own terms. That's number one. That's a vulnerability that's in much sharper focus now that we probably weren't talking about. But then the long-term strategic view of how we wean ourselves off the Chinese economy that has to do with not only the manufacturing, but also the investment that's taking place in China through fairly innocuous, you know, means. For example, I mean, you have retirement funds that are heavily invested in Chinese companies. These are American retirement funds. So it's not just the foreign direct investment that we see companies making in terms of putting factories into China and manufacturing. It's also the financial input that China benefits from U.S. investment dollars that help prop up these quasi-capitalist companies that exist in China. They're not capitalists. They are communists, and everything over there is owned by the state, the Chinese Communist Party. And so when we invest in those companies, we empower China as a belligerent economic force and allow them greater resources and greater access on a global scale. And we need to curtail that and look at this more in a long-term strategic view. And if an individual chooses to go and invest in Chinese, I hope they don't do that. But if they choose to do that individually, I guess they could do that. But I think we really need to rethink this with regard to how we have propped up the Chinese economy through our own foreign direct investment in terms of manufacturing, and also you know, financial instruments that are being used to empower the Chinese economy. So those are some of the things that I think we're going to have to take a very, very close look at and make some stark changes.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for joining us the second Monday of every month. We look forward to talking to you next month.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And I'm Jonathan Reeves of KASU.